you know, going back to the exercise we did in the morning, the yoga visualization exercise, like I was saying, if I'm not well or if I'm very busy, you know, I can still do my exercise, right? Just lying in the bed, I can work out, you know, using the faculty of imagination, visualization, which in generic term I'm calling, you know, the sixth sense.
Memory?
Right. There is, because there is memory, we are able to visualize and imagine. Otherwise it would be a fantasy. You know? So anything that is not based or that is not rooted in memory, I call fantasy. You know? Or instead of memory, the better word is experience. You know? So that's the difference between, you know, fantasy and imagination. Or visualization, imagination versus fantasy. So sixth sense, we're not going to learn how to fantasize, you know. We're going to learn how to use the sixth sense to imagine.
Imagine the things that you already experienced in the past.
Right, but expanding that experience, going beyond what you have experienced. For example, recently I tried to climb a hill running and I wasn't able to. But I didn't stop at that. When I came back home, I got into my meditation, 15 minutes of breath awareness meditation, and then I started running again in meditation, and I climbed my hill, you see. It was fantastic. And I tried that, I did that for about a week, and then went back again to the same hill, and guess what? Although I was not able to go all the way to the top, but I went, I would say, at least half a mile ahead than I was able to earlier. So that's the beauty of using visualization, imagination, to expand, to go beyond the experience. You know, I wasn't fantasizing, meaning I wasn't trying to fly to the top of the hill. You know, that's the... that's how the Hollywood uses sixth sense faculty. You know, it can be very dangerous, and we'll get to that. So basically, you know, and the word sixth sense is a very generic term, right? Well, people use that for so many different things, like hunch or gut feeling, right? We say sixth sense, right? Intuition, right? But here we want to understand the sixth sense first and foremost phenomenologically. That's very important. Not in thought, but in experience, subjective experience. And so today's meditation, at almost all of you I noticed, because you raised your hand, we're actually able to experientially, phenomenologically understand what is the sixth sense. Right? You're able to visualize your child, right? Touch the child. Yeah? Touching without touching. Seeing without seeing. You know? So at least experientially we know to some extent what is the sixth sense. You know? The beauty of it is, many times we are not able to do certain things, right? Like, Stephanie, if you want to spend time with your grandson, and he's at school, or gone on vacation, or there could be other reasons.
I could do that already.
Oh, fantastic.
And then I'll put white
line towards the end. Great. So that way you don't miss your grandson, right? And you are spending time with
the whole. Doesn't that create desire?
Good question, and we'll get to that. How to use sixth sense in the ethical context, you know? That's the first and foremost context is phenomenology in using the sixth sense. That means you throw out the fantasy aspect out of it, you know? So you don't go crazy, you know? You imagine, but you don't fantasize. That's number one. So whenever we use sixth sense, we have to apply the phenomenological context to it. And then second is the ontological context. You know, the analytical understanding what exactly is this sixth sense, you know. Although you have experienced it, you don't know exactly what it is. I mean, what is this thing which made me see without seeing? What is it?
It's inarticulated knowledge.
Right, so I'm giving my ontological explanation. Please do not accept it. Neither reject it. Right? Contemplate on it. See if it makes sense. And I think it's in chapter 6 of my book, The Elements of Soul. Mm-hmm. But I'll give you a very brief ontological description of what sixth sense might be. You know. So we are able to see because we have the organic eye, right? This organic thing we call the eye, right? But you must have noticed there are some blind people who have a beautiful eye, the organic eye, but they cannot see. You know? Now, you're a psychiatrist?
Therapist.
Okay, sorry, yeah. So you have this the neurological understanding and the physiological understanding, but so there are these cases where a person has a beautiful, perfect organic eye, perfect neurology, no problem with the parietal cortex that is related to vision, the back, yeah. So that's fine. There's no problem there, but still the child can't see. Yeah. And so the ancient masters, when they contemplated on these issues, they thought that not only you have to have the organic eye, but you also have to have the non-organic eye, E-Y-E-I. You know, there are primarily three types of matter, ontologically speaking. One is the organic matter, this biological organic matter, then you have the inorganic matter, like this carpet or the chair, inorganic, right? Then there's a third kind of matter, which they call non-organic matter. Some people call it fine matter, something that you cannot see under a microscope or in the particle accelerator, you know. It's non-organic matter. And so the ancient masters thought that you have the organic eye and then you have the subtle eye. This eye is made of the organic matter and then the subtle eye is made of the non-organic matter. And so it's the subtle eye which works in conjunction with the subtle heart matter, which facilitates that vision, you know, with your eyes closed. So again, behind all these organic senses, there is a non-organic sensual matter. So you have organic eye, then you have the non-organic subtle eye, the non-organic subtle ear. The traditional term is indriya. Have anybody heard the word indriya? Indriya means the non-organic matter. So you have the...
How do you spell it? Indriya?
It's a Sanskrit term called...
Senses.
Indriya. Have you heard that word? No.
English you call senses.
Yeah, but it's transsensual. It's not organic. It's non-organic. So you have the non-organic eye, non-organic ear, non-organic tongue, non-organic body. So this is all fine matter, fine non-organic matter. All these non-organic matter, they are linked to something called the subtle heart matter, which apparently is in the blood-filled cavity of the organ heart. It happens to be in the blood-filled cavity of the organ heart, so it's called the subtle heart matter. It has really nothing to do with the organ heart, but it happens to be situated in the blood-filled cavity of the organ heart. It's called the subtle heart matter. So all these non-organic matters are activated by this subtle heart matter. You obviously need the brain to see, right? I mean, you may have eye, but if you have some problem with the parietal cortex, you cannot see, right? If there is some problem with the brain, yeah. But even more important is the subtle heart matter. Everything we experience, seeing, touching, smelling, tasting, right? We experience because there are specific types of consciousness that arise dependent upon the material base or the matter, you know. Only I cannot see. Because the I consciousness, EYE, I consciousness arises dependent upon the I, we can see, you know. Only the nose cannot smell. Because the nose consciousness arises dependent upon the nose as the material base, we can smell. So, all these sense consciousnesses, five sense consciousnesses, they arise dependent upon the material base of the physical five senses. But you still cannot have sensual experience until the sixth consciousness called the mind consciousness, which arises dependent upon the subtle heart matter. Okay? So the reason you can see is because, number one, the I consciousness arises because of the I, and the mind consciousness arises because of the subtle heart matter. Together, when they work together, you have the experience of seeing. Okay? And actually, just before the experience of seeing occurs, it has to go through the brain. Brain is like the demodulator of the information. So you have to have the brain. You know, without the brain you won't be able to see. But before that you have to have the heart. Before that you have to have the mind consciousness, which arises dependent upon the non-organic material basis. Sorry. That's the ontological explanation of what is the sixth sense. But the most important thing about sixth sense is the ethical context. You know, Patricia mentioned, will it not create desire, right? So, the only reason we practice sixth sense is to eradicate greed, hatred, and delusion, and to cultivate generosity, loving kindness, and wisdom. We don't use sixth sense to become a multimillionaire or to become the number one boxer. You can, right? People do that all the time. Which means we practice sixth sense meditation, we cultivate the sixth sense so we can eradicate greed. we can eradicate hatred, delusion. Pizza, for example, right? So let's say somebody who loves eating and just can't resist eating and overeats and has a problem, right? So whenever that person feels like eating that pizza, instead of calling 488-9860, that's Domino's number, I think. in our area, instead of calling and ordering your pizza, you just sit down and eat your pizza, you know? And you can do it, trust me. After a few bites, you can actually feel the delight and contentment in the eating, you know? You don't have to eat your pizza anymore. So, you eradicated greed or craving. So it is with all sensual cravings, you know. In general, sensual pleasures. I'm not against pleasures. In general, sensual pleasures are a trap. That one thing, if you guys take from here today, it would be worth the effort. If you try to satisfy your sensual desires, like if you want to have pasta, you go to Italy, like in that movie Eat, Pray, and Love. It's not going to satisfy your pasta desire. It's going to make it worse. And you can't go to Italy again and again. Because the inherent nature of every... See, the inherent nature of all sensual experiences, right? The inherent nature of all sensual experiences is that they are impermanent. So, if you think you are going to satisfy your pasta craving by physically eating it, it's not going to work because that sensual pleasure will last only for a few moments. It's going to go away. Come back again with vengeance. Then you will eat more, and you want more and more, and you cannot fulfill your sensual desires by sensual activity. Meaning, we cannot fulfill our sensual desires using the five senses. Period. You can't. Because the inherent nature of sensual experiences is impermanence, transience. Right? You want something that can last for a longer time, right? Something that is fulfilling. If you try to suppress your sensual desires, it's as bad, even worse, than trying to fulfill your sensual desires with five senses. Trust me. So suppression is definitely not the way. Neither expression is, which is the media and the consumerist culture propagates. Fulfill your sensual desire, you know, acknowledge your craving, you know, all those punchlines. It's not going to work because the inherent nature of sensuality is that it is transient. It cannot be fulfilled. So how do you handle this problem? You transcend the sensual desires. You are neither suppressing them, neither expressing them, meaning trying to use your five senses to fulfill them. You transcend your sensual desires. There you go. How do you transcend your sensual desires? By using the sixth sense. You know? So sixth sense is a transcendental faculty.
You can distract. Instead of pasta, you go and eat chicken.
That's fine. You're saying you distract and...
Yeah, like instead of pasta, you go and eat your chicken instead.
Yeah, fine. As long as you're not actually going and buying deep-fried $4.99 eight-piece set
Kentucky.
With...
Kentucky.
Can, yeah. So.
This time, even knows the prices.
Yeah. Senses, the five senses, and the sensual pleasures combined is a trap. I'm telling you guys. The sixth sense. Satish, what do you think?
Well, they are what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Let it be. That's their nature.
Right.
Why should you get trapped into that? Don't react.
Right. Yeah. So in a way, we are learning how to not react to our sensual desires. How to act creatively. Yeah. Not react, but act. What do you think, Alan?
I'm in agreement with Satish. I think just surrendering the desires and accepting them, not having aversion, basically not having craving, seeing them for what they are.
This is a silly way of putting it, but suppose you're finding yourself physically attracted to someone, but not.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose that arises.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so if I use my sixth sense,
mm-hmm.
I can see them,
mm-hmm.
and I can run my fingers through the hair,
mm-hmm.
down the shoulders, the back.
You can go wild. If, you can go wild if you want.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then what? Then how, with the sixth sense, do I let that go, or will it? Will it go automatically once I'm doing it with my eyes closed?
Yeah.
So that's important to know.
Mm-hmm.
So this will work that way. It will appease the desire. It will eliminate the desire.
Right. Exactly.
Which, yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
I think so. Right. I think it makes it worse.
You'll be surprised. You'll be surprised. In fact, it's the sixth sense practice is a great way to overcome the formidable power of lust. Great way. Mm-hmm. Because if you actually fall prey to lustful desires, you are doomed. Literally, I'm telling you. Because it is the power of lust is so formidable. You know? There is no way you can satisfy lust by actually pursuing it. No way. It's impossible. But it's so formidable. So the only way is...
addiction comes from... Maybe
right.
Sex addicts. There are people that are truly sex addicts.
Exactly. It is.
There's no satisfaction. There's no end.
Cannot be.
It's the one.
That's
it's
true.
The race toward it.
Too.
Sorry?
Oh, that's
no.
True.
This is
sense.
Right. True of all senses. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm glad they're tired.
So if you try to suppress... If
you're right.
Sorry?
There is a limitation to that, right?
Yeah, that's another thing. There is a limitation to it, right? I mean, if your boyfriend is in Seattle, Washington, you want him right now, right here. It's not possible, right?
Yeah.
But you can have an experience with him right now, right here.
You know,
but in the ethical context, it's very important that you apply the ethical context to your sixth sense practice.
Yes.
Which means... you're using it to overcome lust. You're not using it to satisfy the lust. You see?
I don't think I'm lustful.
Right, I mean, yeah, I was looking at the extreme case.
No, I'm looking at my own, you know, the process that I've been going through.
Right.
And it is, you know, it's a big move
mm-hmm.
for me. And it's, you know, every once in a while that whole sexual thing will come up.
Of course. Yeah.
And then I just, it goes away once I just visualize him and feeling that love.
Mm-hmm.
It's there.
Right. If you get, you know, if this is the fact of life. If you get the lust out of the way, mm-hmm. the love can really flourish. Yes. You know,
but it's the biggest. The only way love can arise.
Right. I agree 100%. But there are all kinds of philosophies where they say, you know, it's important and it's not. It can be the biggest hindrance to truly experiencing genuine love, you know, the sense of oneness. And
I look back on my life, I look back on it around this very thing we're talking about with men,
mm-hmm.
and it was always lustful, always.
Mm-hmm.
And this relationship is different, very, very different. But how, if you act on your feelings of lust,
mm-hmm.
it's disastrous.
It is.
It can only be disastrous.
Right.
There's no option.
Right. And why it is disastrous? Because the inherent nature of all sensual pleasures, mm-hmm. experiences, is that it is impermanent, transient.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to last only for a few moments. Then what are you going to do? You know? You're going to find somebody else, then somebody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then how about your age? You know, the time comes when the mind is lustful but the body doesn't cooperate. Then it's really painful. Then that is real suffering. There is absolute suffering when the body doesn't cooperate with the mind. So,
I have found personally that developing love for knowledge is a huge deterrent in lust. That is valid for me. I have a profound love for knowledge,
mm-hmm.
so lust doesn't even have a place.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it's a natural consequence, which means you take it. It's not a way of attacking the issue of lust and say, how am I going to keep it under control,
mm-hmm.
or not have a lustful behavior. When you develop side strengths,
mm-hmm.
that automatically it goes away. It becomes a non.
Yeah.
And non-existing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is a very important point. We have to develop love for knowledge, you know? And that's the one single definition of how you become noble. We have used the word noble so many times, right? What is noble? You become noble when you pursue knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially what nobility is all about. So that's absolutely essential.
So. So it seems that the body, the first five senses,
mm-hmm.
and the mind, and the sixth one, they're all a problem. And the unconscious is what's going to rescue the first six.
Ultimately, it's wisdom, understanding, that liberates us. Ultimately, yep. And so as we practice sixth sense, as we become more and more aware of the impermanent nature of our sensual experiences, you know, slowly we begin to understand that there are these five senses, there is this sixth sense, but there is no sensor behind the senses.
Mm-hmm.
There is no owner of the senses. It's just a phenomena. It's a phenomenon that arises dependent upon body and mind, the conditions of body and mind. That wisdom, you know, that there are senses but no owner of it. That's enlightenment. Great, thank you.